I work mainly with an organization that's a Southwide multiracial, issue network throughout the South, a network of activists around the South called the Southern Organizing Committee for Economic and Social Justice. And that organization is one of about 700 organizations that are supporting the August 27th March on Washington. And I've been serving as a member of the Planning Council for that, for the National Planning Council for that march. And my organization has been working throughout the South to try to help build the local coalitions for it. And incidentally, although we work in the South, we have kind of a close connection with people in Ohio because we work in sort of a sister organization relationship with HUMAN here in Yellow Springs. HUMAN and my organization, the Southern Organizing Committee, co-sponsor a training program for organizers. The idea, as I understand it, originated with Coretta King, the widow of Dr. Martin Luther King, and Dr. Joseph Lowery, who's president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, which Dr. King, of course, organized and led, and possibly some other black leaders, began talking over a year ago about the fact that the 20th anniversary of the very historic big 1963 March on Washington was coming up and that something should be done, not as a sort of a commemoration or, you know, just get together to celebrate 20 years ago, but because they felt that the country and the world are in such a crisis at this point and that there's a crying need for this country to hear again the sort of moral vision that that 63 March projected. I think the concept was, and if you read the call to the march, you'll see this, the concept was that the vision of a moral and humane society that was projected by the civil rights movement 20 years ago and by Dr. King. But I think we need to remember that that movement was not just Dr. King. He was an eloquent spokesperson, but he was always the first person to tell you that he was not the movement. The movement was hundreds and thousands of people whose names aren't known who were willing to risk their lives for what they were fighting for. And that's what moved the nation. And Dr. King became a spokesperson for that and a great leader. But it was a tremendous movement. But the concept, I think, behind the way this march developed was that the vision of a humane and moral society that was projected by the civil rights movement needed to be lifted up before this country again to address several basic issues. And the problems that we face all come together at some point, that there's the question of the effort to turn back the clock on civil rights, which has been going on, we think, since the late 60s and early 70s. It did not start with Reagan. People began to try to turn that clock back, and it's been consolidated under Reagan, so that you've really got people trying to push us back 100 years in the field of human rights. And that's and with that happening, it's almost bound to be, because we think that's so basic, the whole issue of equal rights and the whole evil of racism in this country is so basic to everything else in the society that it's then everything's wrong if that's wrong. And the fact that the economy has fallen apart and people don't have jobs and people are hungry and so forth, and that we're standing on the brink of nuclear destruction and threatening, the government of this country is threatening the whole world with destruction. And all those things come together because the whole concept of white domination and racism that permeates our society also permeates our foreign policy. And because we've got people running the country that think white people are supposed to run the world, we really stand as a threat to the whole world. So all these issues come together. So they sort of sum this up in the issues of jobs, peace, and freedom, and that there is a common denominator from which people coming from many different directions can come together. So what happened was that Coretta King and Dr. Lowery and other black leaders, well, first they had a series of meetings with other black leaders in the country, so that by last December they met in Washington and issued what they called a Christmas call to the nation to mark the 20th anniversary of the 63 March on Washington with a new challenge to this nation. And that was endorsed by 400 black leaders. And then they reached out to several other groupings of people. that they felt had common concerns, and that included the peace movement, peace organizations that are mostly white, although we don't, that's not the whole peace movement, but because that's sort of a misconception too, but there are a lot of predominantly white peace organizations, the women's movement, the labor movement, which is also facing a crisis because their very right to be organized is under attack, the religious community, and young people. Those were the initial sort of constituencies, and what Congressman Fauntroy, Walter Fauntroy, who's been one of the leading organizers of this, calls he said the five great constituencies in our country. And he said, together we're the majority, and separated we're weak, but together we're the majority. And it's gone beyond that. And then other oppressed nationalities in this country are very supportive. The Hispanic community in the Southwest is organizing very strongly for this, the Native American community, Asian American. The environmental movement is supporting it, and sections of the farmers' movement. And of course, they're in real trouble now. And the American agricultural movement has endorsed it. So it's reached out to encompass large sections of our population who are, and obviously people who think like we do and are part of this march, don't speak for all of these people, but are the religious leaders that are a part of this march, and the, some of the outstanding religious leadership of the country is black and white, Hispanic, are a part of it, but obviously they don't speak for the whole religious community in this country. Because unfortunately, there's some people in the religious community as well as other places that simply have not recognized the truth of what needs to be done to make this a good society. But that's the way it's developed, and it's a very remarkable coalition. And like all coalitions, it's tenuous. I mean, when you get people coming that haven't worked together before, coming together, you know, there's problems, there's conflicts, and that kind of thing. But so far it's held together, and I think it's pretty clear it's going to hold together and do this march, and people hope hold together after that, which is the point. I think what we have to understand, and I'm not sure that a lot of people in some of these movements do understand it, is that the civil rights movement, and by that I mean, you say that's broad, and it is broad, but what I'm talking about is there's always been a civil rights movement in this country, but I'm talking about the particular upsurge of that movement that started with black people in the South in 1955 when Rosa Parks sat down on the bus mm-hmm. in Montgomery and spread from there throughout the South, set the South on fire and turned it upside down, and then shook the whole country and on into the 60s. As I see it, and as people I work with in the South see it, is it was that movement that set in motion and created the atmosphere in which all these other movements could grow. And it was a very wonderful experience to be alive at that time and see what was happening in this country, because I had become active in social justice movements in the late 40s and in the South, and lived through that period called the Silent 50s, which incidentally was not totally silent. There was always a resistance movement, and that's the thing, way I came into the movement originally and so forth. But there was tremendous repression, and people working for social justice were squelched and crushed in that period. And what we saw happen was all of that change when this upsurge developed coming from black people in the South. And I always tell people the beginning of the end of the 1950s was December 1st, 1955, when Rosa Parks sat out on that bus, because then everything broke loose. People found out they could organize. And growing out of that, it set the stage for where we were able to have a mass movement against the Vietnam War in the 60s. And it has concerned me. I'm not sure all the white people in the peace movement realize that they're indebted to that civil rights movement for that. And it's so clear, because if you just compare the tiny movement, and it was, but it was relatively small, against the Korean War, which I was a part of, with the mass movement against the Vietnam War, and the issues in those two wars were absolutely the same, and what happened in between was the civil rights movement. But it also set the stage for the for the new women's movement. We'd had women's movements before, but women could organize again. And as we saw it in the South, labor unions had an atmosphere where they could begin to organize in the South again. The handicapped people began to demand their rights. Gay people began to demand their rights. I mean, everybody realized you can demand your human rights, and they began to do it. But unfortunately, many of these movements, I think, didn't, especially those that are predominantly white or dominated by white people, didn't recognize sufficiently, I think, that their debt to the civil rights movement, and sort of left that out of their considerations. And if you leave out of your considerations the issue of racism, in other words, if you're trying to do something about a problem in this country, if you don't make it an integral part of your effort to turn the policies of the country upside down on racism, you're not going to be able to do anything on any other problem. Now, that sounds abstract, but let me be specific. See, I don't think that you can have all the peace organizations in the world and you can have everybody signing a petition for the nuclear freeze and you can have a million people marching in the streets of New York last June 12th, which you did, I mean, June 12th a year ago. And that's not going to change the foreign policy of this country by itself. And Congress goes right on voting all these hundreds of billions of dollars for the military budget and passes the MX missile and all this sort of thing, because we're not going to have peace in the world. We're not going to have a move toward stopping the arms race until the foreign policy of this country changes. And the foreign policy of this country is based on racism. It's based on white domination of the world. And if we don't see that, and if we don't try to change that, we can be very sincere and work as hard as we can, but we're not going to stop the arms race, and we're not going to pull ourselves back from the brink of World War III. And so I think that all of these movements that developed growing out of the 60s were weakened because they didn't see the key nature of that issue, plus the fact that we had a tremendous repression of the black movement in the late 60s and early 70s. And it didn't stop the movement, but you had people framed up, put in jail, shot at and killed, and that movement was blunted for a while because of the repression. So I think what we've seen happen is that because you don't ever totally crush a movement. You've seen that the movement for freedom of black people and other third world people in this country growing again, and all through the 70s, really. And some people don't realize that because the mass media often doesn't cover what's really happening. And then with Reagan in the White House and his policies, which are basically anti-people, not only anti-black people or anti-brown people, just anti-people, that I think people I know in all the circles I move in, there's been a real sense ever since the Reagan administration came in, a sense of urgency that we have to some way come together. And we've done it in other ways, like my organization helped organize, and I'm an active part of the National Anti-Klan Network, which came together the same way. Here the Klan, we thought it was dead. Here it was rising again. But we better all get together. And people that might not have been so mad at each other they didn't speak to each other before, said there's an enemy out there and we better get together. So I think there's that sense of urgency. But I don't think it's easy. As I say, I don't think that I think it's that it has to be struggled for. And the other thing is that all that this national coalition came together at the national level, and that doesn't mean it's dramatic and it's important, but it doesn't mean a lot unless it really gets to the grassroots. And what the objective of the national leadership of this march has been to try to duplicate that coalition with all these different constituencies in communities all over the country. And that has been happening. There are now coalitions in between 300 and 400 cities, and there are probably some that the national office doesn't know about yet because it's snowballing. People are hearing about it, and they're just calling up and saying, we're coming to Washington. And I think that in some communities, the coalitions may not be representative of all these constituencies, but in many they are, so that you have at the local level people getting to know each other that didn't know each other before. And, of course, the hope is that this can continue to build, because we're not going to change things just by that one day in Washington, but it will give a message to the country and hopefully a message to ourselves that we have the strength to change things. Nobody should be any place but Washington, D.C. on August 27th. And I think that that it is such an opportunity to begin the process, because we see August 27th as a beginning, not an end. Begin the process of pulling together a coalition in this country that is strong enough to make a difference. And this will just be the beginning, not the end. And it couldn't have happened, I think, except that the civil rights leadership took this initiative, because that's what made things happen 20 years ago in a different, you know, different way, different period. Same basic issues, but in a way that the crisis today is more critical. And we don't want to miss this opportunity. And there'll be a lot of work to do afterwards, but this will, if we do this one right, it will be a giant step in the right direction. And that's on a sort of an organizational and movement level. But personally, I just think nobody would want to be anywhere else. You know, I run into people all the time who'll tell you about how they were at the Washington March in August 1963, and I know they weren't there. Mm-hmm. And you run into people all the time and tell you about how they marched with Dr. Martin Luther King, and I know they didn't. but they wished they had. They wished they had. Looking back, they wished they were there. So they've almost convinced themselves they were. So nobody wants to be in that situation on this one 20 years from now, right, looking back and having to lie about it and say you were there when you weren't.